All right. Well, let's start this up. Cherry Developer News, episode number 44 for Thursday, April 26, 2012. What year is it? I'm Ken Rempel, and with me is Rich Friedman. Hi, Rich.
Hi.
So, Rich is in Jersey. I'm in Des Moines, Iowa, teaching a class this week. But I figured it's been since February since we did a Developer News, and it's time. So, Rich was kind enough to join us in the evening. And we have a couple of things up here. If you're going to follow along on the show, it's delicious.com/developernews/44. That's where we bookmark our news. And in fact, if you want to send us a bookmark, you can just send one to Developer News on Delicious. Or you can send it to my Twitter account, @TechCast, in the future, if you'd like to do so. So this is a, you know, a Developer News segment where we talk about all sorts of different things that are interesting to us. Rich, you have a couple things. You've been doing a fair amount of Groovy-based development lately, right?
Yeah, both Griffin and Grails.
Now, right. Now, Griffin, in fact, you're doing them together, right?
Yes. Doing the what's been called Griffin in front, Grails in back. So it's a server-side Grails app and a client-side Griffin app.
Right. So we're talking about like the Groovy mullet, basically. Party in the front, business in the back. It's the reverse mullet. So now I haven't touched Griffin in years. And when I did, it said, "Get away from me, you don't know swing." So I gave up on it. But it was very cool at the time. It's gone through a number of versions, but they just can't get to one, can they? It's 0.9.5. I love that.
Yeah, we're getting close.
Mm-hmm. So tell me, I mean, Andres Almire was a really smart dude. What are they doing these days with Griffin? How is it to develop with?
It's surprisingly nice. I mean, having gone through a lot of ugly swing development in years past, it's really nice. It's about the same difference between doing swing and doing Griffin as it is between doing regular Java web development and doing Grails. It's a really nice way to do it.
And you did a fair amount of swing development before, too, if I remember correctly. So you already knew the terminology and all the different widgets and things,
right?
If I remember correctly.
Yeah, it still definitely helps to know swing.
Yeah.
To
do grip, so they have version 0.9.5, huh? Now, let's see. Do you know much about what's in this release? I just one thing I noticed was that they have over 120 plugins, and that's probably not the full list. But they really have a lot of plugins out there.
Yeah, it's a lot of plugins. Mm-hmm. I would say this release is actually mostly bug fixes.
Uh-huh.
They did some interesting things. They moved... The thing that's really interesting is it's a primarily swing framework, but they moved swing out of the core.
Oh, cool.
And moved it to a plugin.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have a plugin that every application has to include. So I'm not sure what that was about.
And is it still so swing-centric in terms of the rest of it that you couldn't bolt on another thing?
I imagine you could... it does have support for JavaFX and a couple of other things. But yeah, I think it is still primarily a swing. So the other things that I see that they added are, if you're not familiar with Griffin, this is going to mean nothing to you. but they added additional configuration for MVC groups. So this is basically in Griffin you have one command to instantiate the model view and controller and hook them all up and inject them into each other. And what they added was support for passing extra configuration items into the initialization method when they all get wired up.
Mm-hmm. So kind of a dependency injection in a way, or like, you know.
Exactly, yeah.
So you can pass your services in and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, the old way, basically, when you called the create MVC group method, you could pass extra things into it. This is a way to configure extra things to be passed into it so that are in addition to the method call.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
I mean, there's other dependency injection in Griffin, but this is just an additional thing. There's a handful of methods for threading, like do later and things like that to get you out of the swing worker thread and event or in, out of the event dispatching thread. And those methods seem to change names with every release, and they've done. And I think they changed, like, I forget the names. They changed them again, anyway. And then a bunch of bug fixes.
Gotcha. And then in addition to that, so that's your front-end work these days, and then you're doing Grails in the back-end, and Grails just came out with a bug fix release as well. It seems like that one's pretty useful if you're an IntelliJ user, huh?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it seems like IntelliJ was incompatible 202, I guess.
Well, I read that bug report, and it was like that might have only been a problem with older IntelliJ versions. The bug report mentioned IntelliJ 5.x.
Oh, wow, that's old. Yeah.
That's old. I'm using 11.
Me too.
And haven't seen any problems. So.
Okay.
Unless you're using an ancient version, it's probably not a problem.
It wasn't a big issue. Okay. Yeah, so 203 of Grails is available. And then if we're walking down the release chain, might as well talk about this, Apache Tomcat 7027. So it turns out that they are they're bundling WebSockets. I guess this is like as Jetty is doing. They're now bundling WebSocket support in Tomcat, huh?
Right. I think it's still fairly experimental, but they had sort of support for it before. Apparently now it actually works. I haven't had a chance to try it yet. That should be a big thing. So you can use Tomcat instead of Jetty if you want to do your WebSockets.
Right. And a lot of people weren't willing to flip from Tomcat just to get WebSocket support. So.
Right. And the thing I'm really waiting for is there's, I forget the name of it now. When I first started on the project I'm on, I was doing a web front end rather than the Griffin front end. And there was a Grails plugin for.
Oh, C. It starts with a C, right?
I totally forget the name of it, but it didn't actually work with Tomcat 7. So
is it Comet?
Yeah, Comet D. It was the Comet D. That was the name of the plugin, but yeah, it was Comet D. So I'm hopeful that this will actually make that work, but I haven't had a chance to try it.
Yeah, apparently Comet's an older, open connection socket API or something or protocol.
I was called Comet D plug. No, I'm forgetting the name of the plugin. Plugin I was using would use WebSockets or Comet D, or fall back to long polling, and it would adapt to whatever you have. But for whatever reason, was not working with Tomcat.
It should be interesting to see what kind of applications come out of this. I mean, I know it's not like everything needs push because. You know, that's the new hammer or anything, but I wonder how much more efficient app development will be for doing the kind of server push back to the client, you know, for things like chats and.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things for which it's really big. I mean, you can just support orders of magnitude, an order of magnitude more users using WebSockets than with, for instance, long polling.
Right.
So they're talking about being able to support thousands or tens of thousands of WebSocket users because it's more efficient on the server side.
Wow, that's interesting. We'll have to keep our eye open to see what kind of apps emerge from that or already are emerging we're not aware of. Now, I found this interesting article. It's from BehindTheEnemyLines.com. I love this. A computer scientist in business school. What a great blog name. And the title of the post on Wednesday, April 25th was The Google Attack. How I attacked myself using Google spreadsheets and I ramped up a $1,000 bandwidth bill. My favorite line of this whole thing was that he was going through and looking at the numbers. And he said, to make things worse, I realized the cost was going up hour after hour. $50 to $100 more in billing charges with each period passing period hour, I started sweating.
Yeah, the happy ending there is once he figured out that he did it to himself accidentally, he did get his money refunded.
Yeah, Amazon was like, oh, it seems like a problem. Yeah. So it turns out, here's what his problem was. This is a fascinating problem, isn't it? First of all, he had to really troubleshoot the heck out of this to find where it was. He was digging around, checking at bandwidth bills, and apparently he had some sort of 320 gigabyte or something like that, elastic block store volume in Amazon, which is like a persistent disk image. And he was, I guess he was using Mechanical Turk to serve out some sort of work for it. And he used Google Spreadsheet, and it turns out there's a URL image tag that can link to a URL and show it as an image in a spreadsheet. Now, the kicker is that Google is stateless, and the Google, I think I'm doing this right, and correct me if I'm wrong, the Google search engine wants to pre-cache your data for you in case you want it later. So it saw that the Google spreadsheet, you know, had all these links, and it just started kicking off worker threads to grab and prefetch the images over and over and over again. And it killed it. I mean, it was like terabytes of bandwidth going out, 8.8 terabytes of outgoing traffic. That's insane.
Yeah. Well, what's funny is he said, you know, on any normal site, it would have been rate limited, but because it was Amazon, you know, Google felt they could hammer it.
Right, because they know it's like this unlimited bandwidth site from their perspective, so why not kill it? Yeah. Why not throw as many threads off as needed? And it's just a computer thing. It's like bad stock trading software that starts, you know, really trading on the downs, and we have a stock market crash.
Yep.
So 250 gigabytes per hour. Wow. And it turns out he says, Mechanical Turk couldn't generate that much traffic. And he thought it was going to be, given that traffic, going to be serving 250 images per hour. 100 plus requests per second. But so it's a fascinating read. If you're relying on cloud-based services and you pay by what you use, which most of us do, unless it's some sort of nice, you know, bandwidth unlimited thing, which there are very few of, be careful to keep an eye on what you're doing, because you might create something bad. And most importantly, don't use equals image URL. against the elastic block store image file, and don't do a lot of that, and then open the Google spreadsheet. Yeah, that's all bad. He basically shot himself in the foot by launching the Google crawler by opening a Google spreadsheet. So that was a great analysis. It's worth a read, you know, some of the comments are really funny too, and so that's worth it. BehindTheEnemyLines.com, a computer scientist in a business school. And again, the post is the Google attack, how I attacked myself using Google Spreadsheet and I ramped up a $1,000 bandwidth bill. That's the price of admission of the podcast right there. I saw this rumor, and I haven't got a chance to check up on it. It's probably way old news by now. This is back in March. That Pivotal Labs was sold. Is that true? Have you heard of that?
I haven't been following that one.
Yeah, there was some sort of rumor that Pivotal Labs was sold, so I'm just going to do a Google search. This is live news as it's not happening. Pivotal Labs sold. Let's see. Who bought it? EMC buys Pivotal Labs. Now, what's funny is, until I moved my room because someone was complaining about their they were complaining about their jalapenos on their taco salad and screaming loudly, which would preclude us having this podcast. I was looking at the building, a big giant building that says EMC on it. So apparently they're based here. They acquired Pivotal Labs for an undisclosed cash amount to have another tool in their arsenal. So that's interesting because they do a whole lot of stuff. They do Tracker. They fund Selenium, don't they?
And EMC is the parent of VMware.
Yep.
And Source.
Yep, and the Illuminati is going to stop by, and they're going to take my wallet and leave me broke and penniless. Yes, so it's very interesting that now there's, you know, another consolidation of talent back to one of these big companies again. So interesting side lab item there. One of the other things that happened for the last week or so was Philly Emerging Tech. You know, it's been 2 weeks or so, maybe. Yeah, I guess it's been two, maybe even three by now. But just to kind of let people know, we've been putting together the videos for Philly Emerging Tech, And we're doing it in a couple different ways. First off, University of Pennsylvania was very, very kind and offered us their live streaming equipment, which also records. And so they had a video camera and they had a live streaming device that was getting all the slide information and all the audio off of Room C, Ballroom C, which is where the keynotes were, which is where the Project of the Year presentation was, and where like basically 10 different presentations were. So if you're interested in seeing those, pretty much like you're attending the conference, it's a really cool thing. They're using something really cool for it. Hold on a second. It's called... I'm not going to remember the name of this. Philly Emerging Tech. Or emergingtech.cherrysolutions.com is where I put this. It's some sort of live streaming tool that turns it into like this little timeline of slides. I don't know, Rich, if you looked at these yet, but they're so cool. It's like along the bottom, you see a crawl of images of slides. So you can see where the person's going in terms of their talk and where they've been. And you can click on that timeline, and seamlessly, the talk will resume from wherever you clicked. It's super cool. And so those are there's 10 or 12 of those. And I have those on emergingtech.chariotsolutions.com. There'll be a screencast menu, ETE 2012, and one of the posts is in there that lists all theirs. It's like the bottom one, and I'll put that in the show notes as well. They just launched it using HTML5, so if you have an iPad or an iPhone, you can watch these as well. So the ones we have available now, right now, you can watch are both keynotes from Chad Fowler, which is the self-engineering keynote, and Alex Payne's really awesome talk on all the emerging languages. I don't know. Did you see either of those, Rich?
Yeah.
Yeah. I really liked the emerging languages talk. It was something different. It wasn't just Clojure or Scala, right? It was a whole different take, right?
Yep. Very interesting.
Yeah. They had like, you know, strange languages that have emerged but aren't ones that you would normally think of using. And then we have the conference sessions from James Shore, the Kanban and Lean and Large Scale Agile, Bill Pugh for Effective Use of Fine Bugs in Large Software Development Efforts, Chad Fowler's This Is Not a Rail Shop, which I hear was very, very good. If you want a good laugh, a fun laugh at expense of our name, Emerging Technologies for the Enterprise, you should watch Aaron Patterson's talk. He's the guy that did a talk about curing Rails. And apparently code charcuterie is like meat charcuterie. It's curing meats. So he has this long, hilarious talk. It's really, really funny. He gets to the topic like 15 minutes in, but it's entertaining as hell. So that's Aaron Patterson. It's called Code Charcuterie Curing Rails. Jim Wyrick, a very famous Agile person. Kane Sense Examine, I don't know what that is, and that makes me sound very dumb. And Douglas Crockford, both of his talks, they were big. JavaScript Programming Style in Your Brain, which is basically things to do and not do with JavaScript, kind of like the good parts in a nice little presentation. And then Principles of Security, he talks about how things can be very easily thwarted from a security perspective. Then we have Yehuda Katz had an Ember talk on his new framework, which is a new MVC, I guess, a widget framework or something for JavaScript. And Scott Chacon, how GitHub works. More about GitHub the company, I think, than about GitHub the technology. So all those are available right now. And what we also did, which we took a good key from everybody from last year, because it took so long for us to process the videos, and we decided we would record every single room and every single session. And so we've rolled out, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 of them so far, maybe even more. Where they're just the slides and the audio as a typical screencast. But we're going to go and get probably 90% of them out there. There's a couple of them that were really like workshops, and they didn't fit. So pretty much if you didn't go to ETE, you'll be able to watch almost every session from it in the next month or two as we roll them all out. So again, that will be at emergingtech.chariotsolutions.com. It's our new emerging tech site that kind of goes all year round. And we're going to be putting things up there from ETE, and also, you know, analysis and our podcasts are going to live there. We're going to host the Dev News and the TechCast, and you can subscribe to those feeds right from that site. So look for that. Rich, anything else that you want to talk about on the news?
We had a couple other interesting things. Mm-hmm. They may or may not be new, but somewhat new to me, of the Apache Tika project. That's T-I-K-A. It's a sub-project of Lucene, and it it's the core of the extraction engine. It extracts text from various file formats, and it's got support for an amazing number of formats, both things you would expect, like HTML, Office documents, PDF files.
Oh, cool.
But also Flash video files. It'll get the metadata from image formats, audio formats. It parses Java class files, tar and zip files, things like that. Wow. And the jar file is actually an executable jar file, and you can actually use it as a nice little command line utility. It's pretty fun to play with. That's at tika.apache.org.
Yeah, I just added that to our show note, book notes. That's cool. So you can use it just to basically get the metadata out and work with it yourself directly? Is that the idea?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Yep. Oh, that's fantastic. Okay, neat.
A lot of fun to play with.
Mm-hmm.
Another fun command line utility is called T, and I can't really pronounce the guy's name who put it out there, but I'm sure you'll put a link up to it, and it's a Twitter command line interface. And I know there's a few out there already, but I just saw this one go by and downloaded it and tried it out, and it's a lot of fun.
Do you have the URL for that one, or is it like off of...
Yeah, it's sferik.github.com/T.
sferik.github.com/T. Oh, and it's a Ruby gem. Gem install T.
Yes.
Oh, dude, that's cool.
Gem install T tells you how to set up your Twitter API account.
Yeah.
And you can do all kinds of things that are... What I found was interesting is you could do things like list all of your followers or list all the people who follow you.
Oh.
And there are things that are a little more difficult to do with the GUI interface. Frankly, I just enjoy tweeting from the command line. That is so cool. Anyway, so
yes,
I don't have to fire up a Twitter client to tweet something.
Wow, I'm a fan already. I mean, I also am a command line nut, so that's great. The other thing, while we're talking about like code productivity tools, if you're a Mac user and you haven't run into OMIZSH yet, that's a nice tool. ZSH is an alternative shell out there, the Z shell. And there's a project called OMIZSH, and it basically flips your Mac to using ZSH as the shell prompt. They've got tons of themes. You can search by just kind of doing a regular expression or a path expression and hitting tab. If you type a directory name by accident and you meant to CD to it, it figures out that's what you wanted, and it CDs there.
Right.
It does tab completion of directory structures, but also if there's multiples, it lets you arrow down and pick the one you want. It is really an amazing command line shell, and it kind of went virally through a few people at Chariot. Unlike the other viruses it is this year, it was a useful one. And so, you know, you get in there and you hit it up and you get a lot done. It's just it's a superior shell. And that's called, O-my-zsh is if you Google it. And there's a Twitter at OMIZSH that will announce when new versions are up there. And it's self-updating. You launch it, and every once in a while it says, type Y to update ZSH. And it updates itself with new things. It's very cool.
And then the one other thing I had is there's an Android scripting layer. It's called the SL4A.
Okay.
And it's basically an interpreter for a whole bunch of languages.
Oh.
Lets you run scripts on your Android device.
Neat.
It supports Bean Shell, Python, Perl, Ruby, JRuby, Tickle, JavaScript, Shell Script, Lua.
Wow.
So the Java sort of Java-centric languages like Bean Shell, JRuby and Rhino have full access to the Android API.
Oh, that's so cool.
And then for different languages it supports, they built a wrapper around some parts of the API and gave it a JSON RPC bridge that the other languages talk to. So they don't have the full API, but they have large chunks of it. And so far I played around with the JavaScript, and it was fun to send myself messages or alerts and make the phone talk and things like that through a script language.
That sounds like a good thing to tinker with. Very cool. All right. I'm trying to think of other cool tools that I use all the time that it's always fun to get those out there and mention. Seems like I've been using Evernote for almost everything lately. That's like my note tool of choice, just because I can take a note on absolutely anything. If I'm in a computer that I don't use normally, I can fire it up in a web terminal, in a web browser. I would love to see a command line tool for that. And I'm sure someone's going to put that together, but that's a nice little tool for note taking. You use something else, right? What's the one you use?
I'm using Notational Velocity.
Right.
And there is, I'm looking it up now, there's an Android app. I'm sure there's one for the iPhone too. It's named some, it's called Notational Acceleration on the Android. So that's nice. I have it on the Mac and on my Android.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure there's a web interface for that as well.
Right. Cool. All right, Rich. Well, thanks so much for coming on the Dev News with me and chatting on tech and tools. It was fun.
Sure. Glad you got a quieter room.
I don't have to hear about someone's jalapenos anymore. All right. So for the Developer News, I'm Ken Rimple.
And I'm Rich Friedman.
Have a good week.